okay? If you a freak, then you come along with me. And I know what you came here to do. Now, so let me see you get loose. It's going down for real.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven, of course, by the good folks at Liberty Ford. The 2015 NFL Draft is in the books. Danny Shelton, nose tackle, University of Washington. Cameron Irving, center, guard, tackle, Florida State. Nate Orchard, edge rusher, Utah. Duke Johnson, running back, the U. Xavier Cooper, defensive tackle, Washington State. Ibrahim Campbell, safety, Northwestern. Vince Maley, wide receiver, Washington State. Charles Gaines, cornerback, Louisville. Malcolm Johnson, tight end, Mississippi State. Randall Telfer, tight end, USC. Hayes Pullard, linebacker, USC. And Ifo, cornerback, Oregon. Those are the new Cleveland Browns, 12 of them in all, as Ray Farmer came in the draft with 10 picks, left with 12 players. You want to talk about driving competition? That's what the Browns are going to do. On today's show, we will hear from the general manager of the Cleveland Browns, Ray Farmer. He will be with us at 2. We will hear from their team's first pick, number 12 overall, Danny Shelton, at 2:45. But now it is me, the kid, Matt Wilhelm, here in the Dog Bowl in Berea, breaking this down. Hour one's going to be all about everybody's reaction. But I'm just going to say this right off the rip, gentlemen. The Browns, specifically Ray Farmer and Mike Pettine, have put their stamp on this team. This was a solid, it wasn't sizzle, it was the steak draft. Get stronger at the point of attack. Get stronger at the offensive line. Get stronger at the defensive line. Get after the quarterback. Get a running back who can catch the football. But this was all about getting guys who are captains of their teams, guys who are academic All-Americans, four-year starters, productive players, good teammates, high-ceiling guys, but solid guys, high-floor guys. Not a lot of risk here, just a solid overall draft.
Absolutely, and I think, as you mentioned, you know, talking about this class, these are guys that have played a lot of football. And when you play a lot of football, you have a lot of tape. And this being Ray Farmer and his staff, his pick of the litter from a scouting standpoint to dive into these young men and evaluate who they are at the combine, who they are at the Senior Bowl, their interviews, their visits, and also to a huge chunk of playing time on tape. I think what Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer accomplished in this draft is they get guys that love football and are very productive at the level that they played, and in most cases, simply because 7 from the Pac-12, 3 from the ACC, 1 from the Big Ten, 1 from the SEC. These are the conference of all conferences in college football right now, and these were very productive players in those conferences as well.
I think it just Ray Farmer stuck to his guns, went with what he thought was important, went with what Pett thinks is important, and I think this draft really, other than I would have liked to have seen a wide receiver a little earlier.
Me too.
Overall, but I do understand why he lays off receivers like he does. Overall, I think they hit a home run.
I think when you look at this team now, you have a team that addressed its biggest needs in terms of defensively with a guy in the interior of the defensive line. In fact, they got two defensive linemen. You've got an edge rusher in Nate Orchard at 18.5 sacks last year that they really, really like. You get some insurance on the offensive line should something happen to Alex Mack, either this season or after next year. Plus, you got a guy who can come in and compete to start at guard or tackle. I thought it was smart that they address needs now on the offensive side of the ball. You needed a pass-catching running back. You needed a return man. You get both of those in Duke Johnson, who is the leading rusher in the history of the U. And when you think about Frank Gore, Willis McGahee, Edgerrin James, Clinton Portis, that becomes even more impressive. Vince Maley is a guy who caught 106 balls, nearly 1,500 yards last year at Washington State. 6'2", 224, big, strong, physical, not a burner, but plays faster. And people are worried about his 40 time. I did find out in talking to some people around the league, he had an issue in one of his hands that forced him to use the opposite hand as his push-off hand on the 40. And they say that could cost you a little bit of time.
That is, if you're training to run your 40, that's the equivalent to you playing golf right-handed and you having to finish a round per se, with a lot of money on the line in a high pressure situation from the other side of the ball.
So what does that cost you, would you think? Like I would say, of a second?
For me, it would cost me more because of how awkward it was. I'm even in a 3-point stance, you know, in today's, the defensive ends in today's world can go, you know, when they're on the right hand or the left side, they put their right hand down and they can switch hands. They're ambidextrous when it comes to stance. They're good like that. But a receiver who in most cases has trained for weeks with the one hand down, I would say at least a tenth difference.
So he had 3 long touchdowns in college last year. He's the only guy in the history of the Pac-12 to have 2 games of 250 yards or more receiving in a single season. He was the only person who did that in college. I've heard him compared to Anquan Boldin.
I'll take it.
Physical, big, not much of a burner,
well, he's
but
taller
still physical.
Than Bolden's not that big.
6'2", 224, big, strong guy. And I liked when we talked to him. The first thing he said is that he hates losing and that he's going to be competitive. He's going to be physical, and he likes blocking. You get Charles Gaines, a corner out of Louisville that many people thought gave a 3rd or 4th round grade to. You get Ifo with the last pick of the draft, which I thought was genius, a guy who would have been a top 40 pick if it weren't for that knee injury. And now you get him. I think he's got an opportunity to be very good. And some people say he could transition to safety as his career progresses.
He would have been top 15, I think. He had an insurance policy that insured him for top 15 because that's where he's projected
$3 million
after his junior
Oregon.
Year.
Yeah.
I think that may be the steal of the whole draft.
It might be the steal of the draft. I'm surprised nobody, including the Browns, took a swing on Lyle Collins in the 7th round. Why not?
That didn't make any sense to me. I don't understand. There must be some smoke there because they keep saying that he's not a suspect. Well, if he's not a suspect, why is someone not taking a shot on a guy with a 1st-round grade in the 7th round? As far as I'm concerned, and this is just pure conjecture, he might be O.J. Simpson.
We'll certainly, as the legal process plays itself out, we'll find out something about it. But ultimately, this Browns team is a team that is going to be physical on defense. They are going to be physical on offense. When teams come play the Browns, they're going to have the ball run at them 30 times. They are going to have physicality up front defensively. This is a team that is – it wasn't flashy. Again, I would have loved Doriel Green Beckham coming to this team or that kind of a splash.
Wasn't going to happen.
One player like that. It wasn't going to happen. Duke Johnson, a little bit of Giovanni Bernardi is going to bring an element to the offense that you don't have. But for people who are saying, and listen, I wanted a receiver, so don't say that I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid. I wanted a receiver early in this draft. I did. But I do believe when you look at our receiving core this year versus last year, this year you're going into the season with the following receiving core. Your number one will be Dwayne Bowe. Your number two is Brian Hartline. Your number three is Andrew Hawkins. Your fourth is probably Vince Maylay. And then you've got Taylor Gabriel. Last year, your top five receivers were Miles Austin 1, Hawkins 2, Benjamin probably 3, Gabriel 4, and then you had a rotating door at number 5. So the wide receivers are better, your quarterback is better, and I think you've addressed your 2 biggest needs defensively with Danny Shelton, Xavier Cooper on the D-line, and then, of course, Nate Orchard. I think the Browns have an opportunity to make some trades between now and training camp with all that depth on that defensive line.
Yeah, I would agree with you. However, when we were sitting here last year at this time, we also felt that the D-line was going to be the strength of the team, and it didn't end up, you know, that's a position that's really hard to tell, and with the attrition that happens with injuries,
sure,
really hard to tell until they get on the field. I wouldn't give up any of that depth just yet.
No, you're right. You're right. It's going to go into camp. And the reason why, and as Ray Farmer sought out in this draft, that competition at most position groups, adding a couple corners, that means, you know, the likes of K'Wan Williams and Pierre Desir at the end of last year, who got, you know, played some solid football, are going to be pushed by a young man who's cheaper than they are and a hungry young man. So you can't get comfortable around these parts anymore.
But isn't that the sign of a team taking the next step in the development?
It is. Absolutely it is. And also, too, I mean, to talk about this draft, I think Maylay is the only guy, as you look at it, you know, playing in 25 games, he was a JUCO guy, former basketball guy, and you know, Nathan just talked about the 106 receptions and so on and so forth. He's really the only guy that didn't play in a substantial amount of football at the college level, you know, but it was that one solid year.
2 years, and he made big strides.
Exactly.
That's why they think that he's a guy who can be even better as he gets refined and becomes a professional wide receiver.
He's the wild card in this draft. If he ends up being a starting receiver in the NFL, then it makes the whole draft.
Oh, it makes it a great draft. Here's some of the grades from around the NFL. Ty Shelter gave the Browns draft an A. Rob Rang at CBS Sports gave the Browns a B+. So they didn't swing for the fences, but they stood pat, built along the line of scrimmage. Might be the kind of ripple rather than splash the franchise needed. Think that Shelton was the best run stopper in the draft. Great. Dan Kadar gave the Browns a B. Mel Kiper Jr. gave the Browns a B. Said, if there's a big question for me, it's whether they had enough help in the passing game. Quarterback's still a mystery. However, he said that they did a great job getting Nate Orchard. Should be a nice replacement for Jabal Sheard. He said Irving was easily the best center in the draft, and he thought the selection of Ifo at the end could end up being the steal of this draft. Sports Illustrated gave the Browns a B minus. They did not like the fact that the Browns did not get an impact receiver. Elvin Silva at Roto World again didn't like the fact they didn't get a receiver. So the final grades: Bleacher Report A, CBS Sports B plus, Mocking the Draft B, ESPN B, SI B minus, Roto World C plus. Mostly
about,
solid.
So B, if I you take all those, probably it's like about a B, B average.
Yep.
B plus average.
And what I thought was interesting, I don't know if it was you that tweeted it out, but somebody that in Dane Brugler's top 100.
Browns got eight guys.
We got eight guys, and we only had four picks in the top 100. Now, Dane is a guy that I know the three of us really respect, and if that's the case, you know, I think we did even better than a B.
They did do a very good job. We do want to hear from you guys. Again, this was, I think, a draft that was all about saying, listen, you want to know what Cleveland Browns – you know what Cleveland Browns football is now. I mean, I don't think there's any question about the way they want to build this team. I do think at some point you will have an opportunity – to add a receiver. I would hope in next year's draft you could say, okay, look, we solidified the lines. We've done this. We've done that. Now it's time to go ahead and get that wide receiver. But overall, this is going to be a physical team. I think when teams see the Browns on the schedule, they know now they're going to be in for a dogfight. Were there ever teams for you guys when you saw it, you're like, man, this is just – it's going to be physical?
There absolutely was. I mean, in one team that you mentioned with the Jets taking Leonard Williams sixth overall, you go, man, week one – it's going to be tough to run against those guys when you've got Wilkinson, Sheldon, Sheldon Richardson, Wilkinson, and now Leonard Williams along the front. It's going to be different to, you know, the Jets were one of them. I would have to say,
Is there a team that you knew was going to run it at you 40 times? Did you, and as a linebacker, did you like that? Would you rather have a team run it at you 40 times, or would you rather have a team that spread you out and threw it a lot? What was kind of, from a physical standpoint, what was tougher on your body?
What was tougher on your body is the indecision. You know, when a team, you know they're going to run the football and they're having some success with it, but then they start pulling the ball. And that's, you know, very similar to the way the Browns, they had the early season success last year. Their ability to run the football and Brian Hoyer could pull it, boot it out. You got, you know, huge passing lanes for him to throw into. Yep. And that 50-50 ball is very tough to do. And also a lot of what makes Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning so good, even though they're not the typical pro sets working a lot from the shotgun, is they make everything look the same, you know. And we did a very good job of that last year with that offensive line when it was, you know, bulls on parade, all of them running right. You know, you didn't know whether to hand it off to the crow or he's going to pull it and boot it out, you know, naked, or waggle it out and take a shot down the field. And that's what we hope and we know John DeFilippo was going to do, and take a huge piece of that zone blocking scheme as well as they were last year, and integrate some of his, you know, personal nuances to this offense as well.
Yeah, I mean, they do still need one playmaker on offense. And I would rather see it be a tight end than wide receiver. I think I've been harping on it for the last several months. Pro Bowl wide receivers do not translate to Super Bowl championships. And people could tell me, oh, like people said the Chicago Bears, they had a great draft because they took Kevin White with their first pick. And I'll show you, you could tell me that, and it just amazes me that year after year, people always want the sexy playmakers, yet there's statistical proof that those players don't win Super Bowls. If our goal is to win a Super Bowl, why not copy something that's worked before? And I think that's what we're trying to do.
I think it is, and it's going to be – it's a team that clearly they are trying to – given that they don't have the quarterback, and it's not like you can say, oh, poof, we're going to have the quarterback. They're trying to minimize the importance of it by putting together one of what I think has an opportunity to be an elite defense in the NFL. I talked to some of the coaches today. They absolutely loved the fact they got Nate Orchard. And Mike Mayock even said, if you ask the lineman in the Pac-12 who was the toughest guy to block and keep from the quarterback, the answer was overwhelmingly Nate Orchard.
Well, so, he dominated Stanford.
He dominated Andres Pete, who was the 13th pick in the draft.
I mean, when I saw those statistics, I just got a big smile on my face. Like, let's go. We get a pass rusher like that. Now, what I will say, though, is last year I felt like the defense was going to be dominant coming in, and it took them a little while to settle in. There can't be that settle-in period this year.
No.
And it shouldn't be. It's a second year with the coordinator. We should be able to come right out and dominate from jump.
That's a great point. And I feel the same way. The second year, from year one to year two, we've heard from Jim O'Neill, we're going to get, you know, into that graduate-level stuff. But even still, that graduate-level stuff will be added as you grow in confidence of what you do extremely well. And what we did extremely well at times last year will be mastered week one against the New York Jets.
It's going to be a physical one week number one. But, you know, you look again, this is a team that is, people are going to see the Browns on schedule and they're going to know they're going to have to bring their lunch pail. And I think when you look at the fact that you don't have that quarterback, what do you need to get the crowd excited?
Defense.
A dominant defense. So I think First Energy Stadium, if you have that D, if this Nate Orchard can come in and all of a sudden you start getting to the quarterback a little bit more frequently, Shelton collapsed in the pocket in the middle, team's getting beaten up, you have your corners flying around making plays, your linebackers are freed up to go make more plays this year, I think that is going to be the mold, and that's clearly what they are trying to build.
And let's not forget one thing here also. You keep saying that they don't have the quarterback, and
while, you got to see what Johnny
can
do.
And while he was not impressive last year, you can't judge someone on 7 weeks. And over the course of his life, going to from reading about it, high school, college, when he does well is when people tell him he can't do something. He wasn't going to be the starter at Texas A&M. He went out and won the job and dominated. Now everybody's writing him off. If he's right mentally, this is his best shot to prove it. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to come out and be Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, but let's give the guy a full offseason and see if he can develop into a good NFL quarterback. Then we have the makings right here of a championship team.
And if you really do have, you have this offensive line that should be even better this year. Mack is back. Irving's going to be in competing, pushing people. You know, Johnny Manziel is a great guy to start running those boots, keeping it, getting on the edge, one-on-one with the defender in space, making them commit. I think you're going to have the opportunity to do some things. And I love the pick of Malcolm Johnson. I know he wasn't a guy that was on a lot of people's radar screens, but he is a mean, mean man, and he can move all over, fullback, H-back, tight end. I think he's got a little Marcel Reese to him. And I remember when John DeFilippo was in here, he said he wanted that Marcel Reese kind of hybrid fullback, and I think Malcolm Johnson could be that guy out of Mississippi State. All right, when we come back, we're going to get your reaction, 216-578-0850. We can get in-depth on any of these prospects. If you got questions, we want to hear your opinions on what the Browns did and what I would call a very solid, very safe, and a very fundamentally sound draft from Ray Farmer and Mike Pettine here in 2015. Zagura, Wilhelm, Kia! Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. I know that you're going to be okay anyway. You know there's no right or-